Wow. That was pretty cool. Anyway, we're ready to roll. It's Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show. April 18, that's a 9. April's a 4. That's still, that puts the number up as a 4. And then, of course, the year, the 9. So it's 4. Today's 4. So anyway, we had Mr. Barish and Birds on last night, all our sidekicks. And we got a lovely little ditty here coming up now. It's NHF tape, National Health Federation, where Dr. Bell is, of course, stealing the show. And anybody's pocketbook that happens to be under their seat. That's how we do this. That's how we finance ourselves. It's called Pocket Change.
Now let's talk about ionization.
Now, this is another pocket change from your hand to my hand. That's how we do that.
Way. Here we're going to ionize something, like we do in these machines here. So when I talk about ionization, I always give you an example of expansion through water. If we take a pan like this, place it on the stove, first of all, the water, let's say we got a block of ice in it. Okay, in a block of ice, we have a relationship between a proton and an electron, meaning it's a ground state. This is as close as it possibly gets, and its spin rate is very slow now. It's not going around very fast. That's why it's solid. As soon as we put heat, we turn the heat on the flame, we start putting heat, the ice melts, the spin rate increases, and centrifugal force. When you increase the spin rate of an electron, centrifugal force forces it out. So, as a result, the water expands. It gets bigger and bigger. If you ever freeze a bottle of milk and then thaw it out, it'll blow up because of the expansion. It will overreact. So it comes out and starts to move away. We continue putting the heat on it and heat on it until pretty soon the steam starts to come out of the pan. The electron no longer is in orbit here. It goes right out and goes across and goes on the window pane. It makes water over there. That's called ionization when it goes out. It produces positive ions in the pan and negative ions wherever it bombards. Now this has an effect, a dramatic effect on our bodies. Okay, now go ahead and change it. Okay, air ions were getting attention as early as 1754. And Stephen Gray, a medical doctor, discovered electricity in the human body in 1730. So it was only a few years later that they already knew in modern science, back 200-300 years ago, about ionization. But no one talked about it. It was just kept kind of quiet and currently went along. Now we find that negative ions, how many of you in here, by the way, know about negative and positive ions? How many of you study them to a degree? How many don't know anything about them? How many of you are hitting you cold? Okay. Negative ions are beneficial to health. Positive ions are responsible for many of our ills. Clinical studies have demonstrated that positive ions can aggravate sinus, asthma, rhinitis, polyneuropathy, inducing headaches, fatigue, and dizziness. Positive ions just cause all types of respiratory diseases, right down to the point that 1 out of 3 Americans going down with cancer, 2 out of 3 of them is lung cancer, about 0.1 out of is colon, and the rest is miscellaneous. So the largest thing today is lung cancer caused by positive ionization. Okay, go ahead and change it now again. Now, one of the first people to really do research and present something to America was Dr. Kornbluh at Northeastern University. And he did a significant thing to the medical profession at the time he did it, because he was dealing with burn patients. And when a person is badly burned, they're in danger of pain. And they're also, so the first thing a physician will do, the first thing in a code of physicians is, if you take the Hippocratic Oath, is get rid of the pain. That's number one. Well, a person that has a burn all over his body is in danger of dying from heart attack, because the heart gets full of the dead tissue. It can't get through this delicate passage where the different ventricles, so they're in danger of heart attack. So the first thing the physician would do up until this time with this man was give morphine shots. Morphine is the greatest painkiller we know of for pain, especially burns. But morphine has a side effect, and that is cardiac arrest. So the people were being placed in double jeopardy. So it was a very significant discovery to not have to use morphine anymore to alleviate, just to go to a little black box in the distribution network like we have here and relieve all the pain. That's what he did. And of course his first case was when a dive vat exploded on a Philadelphia waterfront, and They brought the people in, and they found that 85%, as a matter of fact, of all the victims treated, they found that the pain went away in 10 minutes. The healing was much faster. There was no scarring. There was no need for skin grafting, and it just went on and on and on and on. The blood pressure was lowered, and a million different things started to happen. Okay, go ahead and change that. Now, the next thing that happened was Dr. Walter Eddy at Columbia, in a series of experiments with 60 mice, bred especially susceptible to cancer, put 30 of them in a room like we're in now, ordinary atmosphere, and 30 of them in negative ions. The room with ordinary atmosphere like this, 28 out of the 30 died in 60 days of just positive ion and then cancer. The ones in the negative ion environment, 2 had lung cancer and 28 had no signs of lung malignancies. So all this took place back in the mid-60s. Okay, this was all going on quietly behind the scenes. Now, there's many types of pollution causing positive and negative ions. Somebody in here tell me what they think the number one source of positive ion poisoning is today. Where is the big source of it? Where are we getting it from?
Somebody tell me in here. I want to see how too many
answer.
Where?
Industry? Number 2 source. Number 3 source. That's down in industry. Nuclear power plants are not your greatest threat right now. I agree they're a detriment to our country, but they're not our greatest threat. Let's say 15,000 feet out to about, say, 120,000 feet where the air is really rare. That's where the critical area is to the ozone, right? So now let's look at a compressor on a jet engine. Let's say a 747, say a 56,000 horsepower. Okay, that thing draws in who knows how many tons of air per second, mixes them with kerosene, which never does burn that well, and blows this garbage out, you know, in the high air. There's where your number one source of pollutants is jet aircraft. One jet plane flying from Los Angeles to New York produces more smog than 1 million automobiles driving for a year. And not only does it do that, it puts it up in the air, you know, in the critical area. So what we're doing is this. We got the Earth, right? We're spinning a web of death with all these jet planes all the way around. And then the one that was really putting the final thing was really going down, it was really bad, was the SST, because it would fly up to 200,000 feet almost, the SST. That's where it, but luckily, through sound, we resisted the SST. But sound pollution wasn't where it was at. It was going to just absolutely seal us off. Now, what did they try to do in the ozone layer? Say that the aerosol can. The biggest thing. Dick Gregory's a good friend of mine. He investigated that aerosol scam thing. He said that was one of the funniest things he ever investigated, you know, when he checked that out. That gives you an idea, you know. You know who they are? How many of you know who they are? I've been studying a lot of politics lately. The investment bankers in the world, they finance revolutions. So there's where the problem lies. People like, you know, these huge families that do all these crazy things. But, you know, this time the system is doing itself in, you know. There will be some divine intervention, but we have to clean it up down here. We have to clean it up here. They aren't going to come and do it for us. It's not going to happen. They're good guys when I say they. Now, these are sources of positive ion pollution. There's other sources that are even more detrimental for shorter periods of time. And they go back. And these are the wind conditions. When you get positive wind conditions. How many of you knew about positive wind conditions? Few. Okay. There are, in Los Angeles, you have the Santa Ana winds. When the Santa Ana winds blow, crime rate goes up. Accident rate goes up. In Switzerland and Germany, they call it the Fons. In Arabia, it's the Hamzan, means 150. In Jerusalem, it's called the Shirav. In Turkey, they know for a fact that when there's an old Turkish law, and that gives you tremendous leniency during a crime of passion and violence. And the leniency, of course, applies when the winds are blowing. Now, the Russians knew this, and when they invaded Manchuria in 1973, they went in with pyramids on their soldiers' heads to keep the morale up. Because the French Moroccan troops had a tremendous time with discipline and morale on those desert fronts because they didn't understand what was going on. Now, in the mid-60s, another scientist got involved in Jerusalem. His name was Dr. Schulman. Dr. Shulman wanted to find out any time what he was looking for, with people like himself that reacted when the winds blew, when the shirav blew over there, he would have a runny nose, he'd feel irritable, he'd feel closed in, stuffy, and all of these things. So he ran an ad in the paper, and pretty soon he had 200 people applying for that ad. And so he began running tests on these people. These are patients he took on free, and he found that the serotonin production went up 1,000 times any time these people were subject to positive ion poisoning. Serotonin production goes up 1,000 times. Serotonin is produced in the pineal gland. We'll get into hormones a little later on. Serotonin is measured in the urine. Okay? This is what happens when we breathe positive ions. We don't start feeling irritable and non-creative. We produce tremendous amounts of serotonin in the body. Okay, go ahead and change that now. Now, why do we need negative ions? Somebody tell me at this point. We pretty much answered it. Don't read that. Now look at me and find an answer. Okay.
Rebalancing.
We need them to produce cells in our body, right? Our body is an electrochemical community of cells on one level. We cannot reproduce any cells in our body without the presence of negative ions. Now, negative ions are measured by ions per cubic centimeter. Pearson Whitson nearby here measures them, for example. When I started giving my lectures in 1973, we had 1,200 positive ions, 1,000 negative ions per cubic centimeter. That was the way the measurement was done, and still is today. That was what the national, international statistics were at any given day overall. 1,000, 1,200. Okay, now. Let me have one of my books. I want to read to you a real brief paragraph out of my book here. I have a book, please. You guys having fun?
Yes.
Not boring you?
No.
Okay. I'm going to make sure I'm doing good here. I don't want you to throw me out because the subject material wasn't good. See how pragmatic. I talk about spaceships, but I ground you out first. You know, there's no flying into space to get rid of the problem. Take care of it here first. Okay, in this book, in the first part of it, it's very pragmatic. It gets real spacey in the back, but it's very pragmatic. I just want to read a couple things about what are called acute episodes in air pollution. It was probably the shock of notorious air pollution disasters which swept in a wave of acute illnesses and sudden deaths that first stripped the smokestack of its glory. And turned out what was a monument to progress. And turned what was a monument to progress into a gravestone for the dead. Now I wrote this part right here, and all these statistics that are in here. This is very heavily laden with statistics showing you what smog does to people, fabrics, rubber, vegetation, all kinds of things, metal, paper. I even have calculated here how much aerosols. How much wear in the air on any given day, how many tons of shoe leather and automobile tires are running in the air. All that stuff is in here. And I have to owe a lot of that to the American Lung Association. You know, the little thing that looked like that, it used to be the tuberculosis. Now they're called the American Lung Association. Do you know that when I visited in Hawaii, that I visited their headquarters over there, and they had 50 people on staff in Honolulu to deal with the smog in downtown Honolulu? 50 people. Now, how much do you think that's costing the American Lung Association, which is supported by charity, to staff 50 people in Honolulu? And these people were busy every day. And you know what they were dealing with, where the smog was coming from, that they were dealing with in Honolulu? Japan. Okay, now you tell me we haven't got a problem. Okay. Meuse River Valley, Belgium. The first of the tragedies to arise worldwide concern occurred in Belgium in the Meuse River Valley, where a heavily industrialized area extends for 15 miles. That terrain has valley topography, typically lending itself to inversions, and I explain what inversions are in here. The pollutants gathered day after day and stagnated. Within a few days, thousands fell ill, 60 persons died from poisoned air. The dead were mostly the elderly and those already ill from diseases of heart and lungs. Those who merely sickened complained quickly of coughing and shortness of breath. Denora, Pennsylvania, 1948, October. During an inversion that covered a wide area, now this is 1948, of the northeastern United States, Denora had its tragedy. Among a population of only 14,000, 6,000 fell ill, There were two deaths. But think about that. 6,000 people fell ill in 1948 because of smog. So it's not something new. London, England. 5-day inversion, December 1952. 4,000 people were chalked up dead. Not just there. 4,000 in 1952. So you begin to see that one. There's many others quoted in there. You begin to see what the problem is here. We're running out of air. It doesn't take too many statistics. So now, we had the thing in Tokyo, Japan. By this time, we were measuring it, and they had a ratio of 3,500 when several thousand people died in Tokyo one day in 1966. It was 3,500 to 1,000 on that day, because it rises up in cities. Okay, now, we kept going in our lectures. We got to 1976, 12-15-76. We had 2,000 positive ions worldwide. 1976. Today, we're right under 3,000 worldwide. So we're getting close. Worldwide, now I'm talking about in L.A. Los Angeles last year, we hit 3,500 in October, which I told people in L.A. Of course, you never had any honor in your own land. I'm from L.A. Nobody would listen to me down there. I told everybody it was coming, you know. I wasn't trying to gain any recognition by a negative prophecy, and it came. How many of you remember of October in L.A. what happened? Every hospital bed was full. I happened to be on the East Coast when it happened, and all the television sets, all the way across the country, you know, every night, 6 o'clock news, they were covering, you know, the tragedy in L.A. of the air pollution. And we have a manufacturing plant where we do the wire bending, and it has about, 200 people working in it. It's about a 100,000 square foot facility. And none of those people were working. They were shut down. The wire benders were shut down for almost 3 weeks. And then, of course, when November, when the winds came and the inversion lifted and it got clear again, everybody forgot because the attention span is so short of people in smog. Now, let's look at the symptoms of positive ion poisoning. It has dramatic symptoms. The first symptom is indecision. That is number one. Okay? That's number one. That's the first symptom of positive ion poisoning. When I lecture, look here. Now, if we were to say, you know, energy and feelings come from air, relationships, and food. Okay, there's probably 50 people in this room. I'll bet from the feeling that we have right now that if I said, Sai, we're going to have a seminar 3 days from now, and I won't see you till then, sign up back there, about 50% of you would show up that signed your name back there. You'd all probably sign it, but 50% would show up. Okay, that's not bad. In Los Angeles, if I do that after a health show, and I sign up 50 people and 2 show up, you know, that's amazing. And the only reason that they were wanting to sign, because at that point, the group feeling was off each other more than the air at that point in time, so everybody went got enthusiastic. If I go to Dallas or Houston and sign everybody up, where the air is a lot cleaner than it is here, I'll get 80 to 90% sign-ups showing up whenever the thing is set. The worst area for that is Southern California. Okay, it's not too good in San Francisco, because we do a health show at the Jack Tar Hotel every July, and we have a seminar afterward. And about 60% of people in San Francisco will show up to the seminar to sign for it. But in other places, I get 90%, 100%, and sometimes I'll get 120%. I'll get a bunch that didn't sign up. Number one symptom is indecision. Number two is paranoia. Paranoia crops up because of lack of oxygen to the brain. It's one of the greatest symptoms. It's greatly coupled in marijuana smoking today, because marijuana smoking chelates the minerals in the brain and accentuates the paranoia. The paranoia does not come from smoking the marijuana. It comes from the lack of oxygen and positive ion poisoning that's in the atmosphere where it's being smoked. Okay, this is alleviated by B-complex, mainly neutrolicide, the B-15, B-12, and B-17. Okay? Understand how your bodies work. The next thing that happened, the third symptom, these are in the order of their occurrence. The third is a shortening of the attention span. That is number three. Your attention span starts to go shorter. Okay? Now, I know I went to college, you know, I went to college up until the time I was about 34, from the time I started when I was 13. And I'd be in school, out of school. And until I started wearing a pyramid, my attention span was definitely getting shorter. But after I started wearing a pyramid, I've been going in my 6th, 7th year almost. Now, in July, I think I hit 7 years wearing one every day. my attention span started getting greater. It's a lot greater now than it used to be. Now, the fourth symptom is the worst one. First symptom is called temporary lapse of consciousness. And then finally, loss of form. Okay. Now, the first, a typical episode of temporary lapse of consciousness is understand that the brain requires oxygen and ions, negative ions, to synthesize vibrations and send them out. If you stop off the oxygen, the brain can only cope for about a half a second. You shut down somebody's blood supply to the brain, and normally they go into coma in about 60 seconds. And if they go 3 or 4 minutes, there's permanent degeneration of brain tissue, and 4 minutes, usually they lose their body, right? Well, the first thing that happens is you're going down the freeway and you're breathing smog, somebody's exhaust, or you got your windows rolled up and you're smogging yourself. You're looking right at the car ahead of you and bang, you rear-end them because they slowed down and you didn't even know it. Because you blanked out for a second. The first, then you recovered, but you weren't even aware of it because ignorance doesn't recognize itself. Neither does loss of consciousness. You weren't even aware you blanked out. You know, it's like 2 seconds isn't that much. It's like one, two, and then gone. And then you're going again. It was really noticed by the FAA when Flight 401 was carrying about 125 people flying from New York to Miami, crashed right outside the airport in 1977, killing 75 people. And after they investigated the onboard flight computer and all, which is called the little black box, and all the other instruments and things they had on the aircraft, they found that the only thing that happened was pilot, co-pilot, and navigator error all at once. Because they temporarily went out of consciousness and flew that bird in the ground. They lost about maybe 3 seconds of consciousness all at once. And that's the way it usually happens in an aircraft. And so they flew it in the ground because that particular plane has a engine. It was flying 800 feet over the airport. It has a engine up on top of the fuselage. And that engine, when you slow it down too much, has what they call a violent stall characteristic. And so that it loses power. So they just for probably 2 seconds got that plane nose down. And they probably were aware of it and tried to pull it back out, but they stalled the compressor in that engine and it went right down. And that was the first time that the FAA officially acknowledged that they had a problem on aircraft. Now, at NASA, we were aware of it. But commercial airlines, which are based on greed, and NASA, which is based on accomplishment, you know, and will to get there, had two different viewpoints. So we put negative ion generators in all the spacecraft. We were making them out of aluminum, which is toxic. Today, they're going to try to make them out of titanium. But there's a big war going on right now between Russia and the United States because Russia supplies 80% of the world's titanium right now. And the only other place we can get titanium from is the moon. That's why they built the Enterprise, because they wanted to do strip mining on the moon for titanium. So you begin to see some of the games that are going on some of the other levels that we're aware of. So temporary lapse in consciousness is what happens when you have positive ion poisoning. Well, we were aware of this situation that we're getting ourselves into, because let's look at Mars, for example. People on Mars are the same thing that we're about to do to ourselves. Look at the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter. That race blew themselves up. The entire planet exploded. So you can look around our own solar system and see traces of civilizations. Matter of fact, how many of you know that there are, we actually, with Mariner 9, took pictures of pyramids on Mars. How many of you knew about that? They're in clusters of three. Yeah, we have pictures of Mars, you know, pyramids on Mars. From the civilizations that lived there, you know, a long time ago. So, our master builders on this planet knew that the pyramid would become a very necessary tool at some point in time for the furthering and enhancing of our race. And, of course, the pyramid produces, as one of many things, a negative ion effect. Okay, now, put that slide over. Now, let's examine that for a second. Okay, if you take a pyramid and place it over a plant, the plant will grow 3 to 5 times faster than a plant with no pyramid energy on it. Now, you can take coffee or grapefruit juice or orange juice or anything that's got any acid to it, put a pyramid over it and it will neutralize it, shifting it to an alkaline state, which then demonstrates once again the negative ion effect, because all chemical change is ionization and chemical change leads to cell reproduction and so on. So these are ways of demonstrating all of these effects of the pyramid. Now I have flower shops. I have on videotape, which we'll probably show tomorrow, a flower shop that put pyramids in the ceilings. And as a result, the spoilage of that flower shop went to such a low amount that the lady increased her profits like 500%. She has a little flower shop about four times as big as this room. And when I first met her, she had these big Dewey trash bins out back full of dead roses, because roses will go bad in 3 or 4 days. They're not what she considered up to spec to sell to the public. But when she put these pyramids in, roses would last a week, 2 weeks in there. So that saving right there, what she didn't sell in one day, passed on day after day. Then she took and found that you could take a bouquet that was really precious to you, hang it upside down in the pyramid, and all the sap would run out to the ends of the flowers, maintaining the color, and then the pyramid would allow the water to evaporate from the flower, and then you had a frozen bouquet, and you could take a bouquet, it would look fresh, and it would last 50 years. She'd spray it with clear lacquer. So these two discoveries caused her to make enough money to buy her son first a brand new four-cylinder motorcycle, Honda, and then she bought her son a brand new Corvette Stinger, and now she bought him a $100,000 Mack truck. That's over a five-year cost savings of Pyramid Energy in one installation. So, I mean, it gives you, I mean, we'll want it on and on all day long in cost savings. That was before we even used negative ionization to enhance that. We got in banks, it goes on forever. Now, second thing is, you can take sprouts. You can take, and you can get, if you're going to grow a plant, any type of plant, normally it would take like 3 days to grow sprouts, like wheatgrass sprouts, things like that. We can grow them in 10 hours with a pyramid because it accelerates the growth. But actually, it's not accelerating the growth. It's allowing the growth to take place at its normal rate at which God intended it to do. But we've got our environment so screwed up, our water so screwed up, that everything is really going a little slow. Things should go faster than they normally do. But so we oftentimes will say the pyramid sped it up or increased it 3 times. It only allowed it to get closer to what it was supposed to in the first place. That's really what's happening. Now, there are 13 or 14 major vitamins known today and used and taken by us, but they all reduce down to 7 different basic vibrations. And these 7 different basic vibrations are the same 7 different energies and rays that are contained within the pyramid. And, of course, you can take pictures of them with Carillion photography. You take a green bean, for example, out of the soil that's mineral deficient. It has a very low aura. You put that green bean inside of a pyramid, it will charge the aura up great big, and then you put it in the pan and cook it, and you're able to restore a lot of the nutritional value back to it, because the pyramid does contain the life force vibrations. That was demonstrated in the apple experiment that I was telling you about. So, I mean, you can go on and on and on. There's 1,000 different things you can use the pyramids for around the house, let alone getting them on your body or even near your body. Yeah. Oh, 2 or 3 minutes. You know, we use them in meat, for example. You can put a pyramid over the meat and it will make it very tender. And if you left it there for several days, it will turn into jerky. It's quite interesting, you know, what you can do there. Okay, now go ahead and change it. Okay, now, let's look at, I'm going to talk about now, for example, what a pyramid is. Okay? Hey, we are made up of oxygen, hydrogen, nitrogen and carbon. That's what we are made up of. Mm-hmm. Now, in our bodies, the carbon atom is in this shape. It's the octahedron. It looks like this. This is the natural shape of the carbon atom. This happens to be a piece of pure quartz. And this wasn't cut by man. This is the way it occurs in nature. This is one of God's shapes right here. It's a divine shape. The carbon atom in the body locks these three gases. As a matter of fact, it's true of the whole universe. It locks in these three gases, forming all matter as we know it. So the pyramid becomes the central shape of which all other shapes on the physical plane are derived from. What does change, however, is the density of the pyramid, or the carbon atom. There are different densities. For example, on one density level, carbon can be graphite. On another density level, it can be gold. Soft, malleable, but highly reflective. On another density, it becomes hard, it becomes diamond. And all of these precious elements, of which are highly carbon-based, of course, are attract themselves to man because they have energy, and man, of course, depending on what mode of consciousness he's in, expresses his lifestyle around the elements rather than letting the elements be expressed around him. He becomes victim to them. So, example is gold. Now, gold is one of the most misused elements in the world today. The Peruvians had the right idea when they used gold to line their temples with. When you go inside of a golden temple, you will experience a tremendous high in consciousness. Your consciousness is elevated many times what it normally would be if you weren't inside this. But what does man do? Man, who's typically coming out of the ground, takes the gold, buries it back in the ground, prints some money and says to his fellow man, this represents the money that's in the gold that's in the ground. The other guy accepts the money and says, I'll take that note. And then the guy, after he's handed off the note, goes and digs the gold out of the ground and lofts it to some other place. And this is what's been going on for our monetary systems for centuries on this planet. And it happened when the Spaniards came along and took the gold away from the Peruvians. Of course, there's a thing called karma that's attached to it. And the Spaniards didn't get home with the Peruvians' gold. It took the ship to the bottom of the sea when the Armada went down. So, the pyramid is a life force locking principle. The pyramid in your body holds your form in your body. If you didn't have pyramids inside of you, you'd be out there in an astral body or mental body or causal body or ethnic body, whatever level you wanted to work yourself to, but you wouldn't be on this plane here. So the pyramid holds you in. Now, that brings up what we call the pyramid principle. The pyramid principle is where matter is made flesh. Okay? Matter is made flesh.
That's kind of neat, isn't it? So we'll finish that tape up there. And we will stop this puppy and we'll get you the next one here because we have another one. That was part two, side A. I don't know if there's a side B or not. Let me just flip it over and see how this thing goes. Because a lot of these recordings are different one another. Let me just continue right on. If not, we'll go right into the next phase of something else. This is a really good ionization lecture. I'd forgotten about this one until I got it out. And it's a really good one. Let's see if the puppy's playing there. Yeah.
Now,
here we go. That's going to go.
Pyramid around Jesus Street. Because they think it's, anytime a person is a freak, they're obsessed. Obsession is only caused by failure to serve God in the right way. And also leads to satanic actions. And of course, obsession means attachment. So the person making the accusation is actually the devil because they've made it up and they've bred themselves into it. Mm-hmm. So this becomes a tool of Satan to the fanatics. That's what it's been called a lot. And so this is, but what the understanding is that the pyramid is the principle of matter made flesh. And people will confuse it with the Christ principle. The Christ principle is the principle whereby flesh is made spirit. Higher principle. So the pyramid becomes a lower triad to a higher principle. That's all. The pyramid allows when worn on the body to go into balance. When the body is brought to balance, then the spirit steps in clearly. This is a temple here. Okay? This is a temple. So what we're doing is we're trying to clean up our act, clean up our temple so that something higher, a higher manifestation of our natures can occupy this temple long enough for us to express it and produce an action which gives us some kind of a trail of karma that's in conjunction with this higher aspect, and then that trail can connect with somebody else and we can leave two trails behind us. That's what we're trying to do. But it's a little hard to do right now when you're bringing this dirty air and all this other stuff that we're doing, which is causing our hormone development to go regress rather than do progress. We're actually regressing now in our physical development at this point in time. Now, what we did at Pyridine was we had to build a pyramid that affected your head and your body. A cardboard pyramid on the head doesn't do anything. If you were subjecting yourself to, if in other words, if your body was so sensitive to shapes that if you could make a pyramid out of cardboard, then you would be affected by every shape to such a degree you'd have no control over yourself. So the shape had to be amplified to make it have a dynamic effect on the body. This was common sense. So what we did is we found that gold was pyramid shape. Well, the first thing we found with the pyramid, we had to align it to the north. So if we had a gold on here, we didn't have to align it to the north anymore because the gold gave us an infinite number of directions how this pyramid would perform, which is exactly what gold does. Then we had to raise the power even more. So we began to work with different metals, dissimilar metals, metals being active, metals being passive. So we started plating active and passive metals using nickel as the passive metal, Gold is an active, copper is an active, silver is an active metal. And we produce what's called the argon effect. So we were able to produce a category of four pyramids to date that produce four different distinct effects on the body. And this, of course, is how we began to do all this years and years ago. Now go ahead and change that. Okay, in 1930, WLW went on the air. Cincinnati, Ohio, they interviewed me one day. They had 500,000 watts of power. When they went on the air, 500,000 watts of power, they destroyed all the crops and vegetation within a 5-mile radius of the transmitter. Wasn't that neat? So the FCC stepped in and made them lower the power of the transmitter to 50,000 watts, what it is today. 50,000 watts. That's why no radio or TV station in this country has more than 50,000 watts of power. But that didn't solve the problem. It only solved the disastrous results of the problem. You still have a subtle influence continually bombarding you. Any place you can turn a TV on or hear a radio, you're getting the radiation from it. But we began to do experiments to alleviate this. We found that using shrimp representing a single cell in the body, we put shrimp underneath the pyramid and some more away from the pyramid. In 6 to 8 weeks, the pyramid, the non-pyramid shrimp, receiving all the radiation throughout the planet at this point in time, they all float to the surface, and the ones under here would be still fresh. These would last a year. So we found that shrimp would last over a year inside a pyramid, and they'd only live 6 to 8 weeks outside.
Well, that gave us an idea. This, of course, caused us to develop the big pyramids that we use over the bend. And it also caused us to build systems like this, because we were now coming in not from a component, but from a systems point of view. How many of you at night have ever gone to sleep, and just as you start to go to sleep, you find yourself going through some violent jerking sensation? Right? You jump. And it feels kind of scary. Do you think that's a normal thing? Do you think that's natural? And what's happening is this. The physical body is here. Okay? The physical body at night goes to sleep. And here's what sleep really is. Sleep is created when the brain cannot electrically communicate with the body any longer. Okay? There's like a short circuit. And what causes the brain to short circuit is a buildup of lactic and uric acids by muscle movements and muscular movements during the day. As you move a muscle, it creates waste material. These waste materials pollute the blood, and therefore robbing the blood of its ability to carry oxygen throughout the system. This causes the synapses in the nervous system to stop, and when this happens, it takes huge amounts of electricity to overcome all of these barriers. So the brain takes the consciousness takes the path of least resistance and says, I'm going to go somewhere. Remember, energy cannot be created or destroyed, and consciousness is definitely energy. The consciousness says, I'm going to leave the physical world and go to the astral or mental world, meaning that you're going to be dreaming. Consciousness is going to go off and dream and let the body regenerate itself. Now, while this takes place, the body, during dream state and rejuvenation, the body uses up 80% of its nutrients at night. Okay, your stress, vitamins, all of that are burned up at night, 80%. That's a statistic, okay?
Whether you dream or not.
Whether you dream or not. Consciousness may blank out, you may not dream, but it's still, in fact, operating in a higher world, okay?
What about digestion? I thought digestion was inhibited. Or is that something else?
Digestion takes place at a slower rate. But the energy, the digestion is not where all of the nutrients are used up. Stress is the primarily used where your nutrients are normally used up. Stress, of course, is brought on by being around other beings that aren't in harmony with God, and that contradiction requires, Christians to overcome the barrier that's set up. So now, at night when you go to sleep, what happens is this. Okay, now, your physical, you go out of you rise, your etheric and your mental and astral bodies rise out 2 inches or more as a physical. So you start to float above yourself a little bit. And what happens is, we're trying to charge off the Earth's magnetism, called anima mundi by the Tibetans. But this interference of this various radiation comes along and bombards this delicate vehicle, so it has to seek protection and it withdraws back into the physical at a violent rate, so you get the shaking sensation. That's why we built these big pyramids, because it alleviated that. Okay. Now, the next thing that happens is, during this time, when the person is inside the pyramid, just like the shrimp, the pyramid produces what we call the Faraday shielding effect. meaning that no radiation can penetrate that that's harmful to the body. And another example of that is taking one of our large pyramids out on a bright sunny day and putting it, you know, in the sun and climbing in it. And you won't get a sunburn, especially if you're a person that has. And I demonstrated that to Betty Lee and her husband in Hawaii. We took a couple of people, we took four people in the experiment. Both were very white because they hadn't seen any sun. We put two in the pyramid, two outside the pyramid on a Hawaiian beach in the summertime when we were over there. About 4 hours later, we had a nice tan inside the pyramid, but the two people outside had severe overexposure, and they ended up having to go to bed for 2 days with sun exposure and severe burns. People inside the pyramid had a nice tan. That's all that ever happened. So that shows you how the ultraviolet, which is harmful to the skin, is blocked by the pyramid. Radiation of another vibration, because remember, ultraviolet is up towards the color spectrum. But here we're talking about electromagnetic radiation. Now, oftentimes, the actual psychological experience of sleeping inside of a pyramid over the passage of time is total alignment to the magnetic, the true magnetic characteristics within the body. So that means that you'll require less sleep after you're identified with that pyramid. After a 90-day period, you'll require, the average person requires 25 to 35% less sleep. And you wake up in the morning refreshed and energized. Okay? I very much miss sleeping in a pyramid when I'm on the road. Okay?
Okay, you talk about like astral travel.
Yeah.
Where people would be able to move about outside of their body. What kind of protection could they afford that delicate body when they were actually moving around?
Okay. The astral body is not affected by this type of radiation. Okay? But the etheric body is. So the etheric body is always staying there, and the astral body will be free to travel.
So the etheric one is the one that's just hovering above it.
Uh-huh. All right. The astral hovers too, but then the astral moves out when the astral travels. Okay? Which I'll talk about in a minute.
Do they have one here?
Large pyramid?
Huh?
You can order and I'll send it to you, okay? Now, here, let me tell you a little story about these large pyramids. We sell them for $60, $70, and $80, $10 a foot, okay? I don't carry any around with me, you know why? Because I don't make a dime on them when I sell them. But I sell them along with our product line because they're necessary. So I don't carry them with me. Yeah, order and I'll send it to you in a special box. But we make no money on them. They really don't. It's very expensive to build the pyramids that we build for the bed. But they're necessary. We make enough money on the other things, and Paradigm is primarily a holistic movement within itself. It's the foundation, and it's here to educate. So we provide what is necessary. We make some money on some products, and you make no money on others. So the money, the ones we don't make money on, I can't afford to fly them around the country. I'll just take orders on them. Because people learn about them, they'll buy them. And then when I send it through the mail, then I don't lose anything. It's cheaper. Carry these things on the plane, I get hit with excess baggage all the time. But I can send you one. No problem. It takes a few weeks to get here. So now, you require, you know, less sleep when you sleep inside of one. But you have another thing. During the time that you're, the 90-day period that you're breaking in sleeping inside of a pyramid, you're going to find yourself getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning, fully energized, and then at 5 o'clock in the morning, being very tired again. As though you had no sleep, you'll find yourself going through a transition because the body is going through a strong detoxification. It produces a tremendous detoxifying effect on the body sleeping one of these things. Okay? And so the toxins will give you energy. A lot of people have all this nervous energy, but they can't channel it into anything. Well, if you take a Carillion Aura or do a iridology or a barium x-ray, you'll probably find their lower intestine is full of poison. And it's giving them the energy because it's a form of energy, but it's a negative energy to the body. It just keeps them moving and they can't balance it. The body can't balance it, so it's out of balance, so they're sporadic. They're not crazy and everything. But they appear to be high energy. The first people are really low energy. They have to go through a purification and get their body energy balanced. Okay? So that's how we came about developing this unit here. Then we had a second thing that we developed, which I've got here.
So what happens once they're detoxified? Then how much sleep?
They require less. What I'm saying is during the detoxifying period, the sleep will vary. Like some people, you put them in a pyramid, they normally require, and this has happened to me, I used to require like 6 hours sleep, okay?
Is that all?
Yeah. And then I'd get in the pyramid and I'd suddenly need 8 or 9 hours sleep. And the reason I needed more is because the pyramid would bring up the toxins. The body would then destroy the toxins, but it created, it took energy to do all that, so I'd get tired while I was sleeping. I got through that period. These are some of the things that you get. And this is often indicated when you go on a fast. When you first go on a fast, your energy level goes up for maybe 2 or 3, 4 days. And then suddenly it starts going back down.
Yeah.
So then you require a lot more sleep while you're going through the latter part of your fast. Okay? So the pyramid is producing that same condition on the body to give you a comparison. Okay, now you begin to understand it. Well, this was developed, this pyramid thing here was developed at NASA years ago. I wasn't the originator of this. This was an old idea that was brought about years and years ago of research. I was the one that pretty much brought it forward into human consciousness. But, you know, in the American public, because my job is to educate the American public. That's my primary job. So we went a step farther. And in the process, we came out with these gold pyramids like you see back here. Now, when we came out with the gold pyramid, we were working in a clinic in Los Angeles. We started studying the effects of drugs on people. We found that the largest drug addict in this country was a Valium addict, and that was the American housewife. So we knew they had a hypertension problem. They had too much electricity that they couldn't deal with. Well, the gold pyramid has a balancing and tranquilizing effect on the body. So we manufactured for several years gold pyramids. It was the only product that we had. We put them on people that were on Valium. The Valium came off and the pyramid went on, and we were very successful in that. We had many, many doctors who wrote prescriptions to Valium putting pyramids on their patients' heads, and they were having good results. So it gave us tremendous energy to move forward. In the process of doing that, we began to study that there are different parts in the body called endocrine glands. And inside the body, these different energy glands had to be balanced within one another. So we started coming in, going in from components. This is a single gold pyramid here in the entire system. We developed this product right here, which is called the irradiator. And what happens with this is we look at a bed here. Now, we look at a bed and we're sleeping in it. And this thing is standing over here in the corner. It projects an energy like this at the body. It also projects a blanketing energy. It's a different form of energy than putting the pyramid over the bed, however, on some degree. And the fact that here's what you can do with this thing. There's a phenomenon a few years ago that was shown on television where a boy would hold a Polaroid camera up to his head. And he would think, you know, a thought for a minute, and he would make a little shriek and pull it away from his head. And then he'd pull the picture out of the camera, and you'd see the picture like the Eiffel Tower. How many of you saw that on television? I've seen that. Okay. That's called the Herogamous effect, meaning that Polaroid film or film of any sort will receive energy if it's transmitted via the mind, and to a point that the mind is organized enough, it can cause a permanent impression. Well, the reverse is possible too. If you take a photograph and amplify that energy to a wavelength that the mind can understand and project it with some kind of a projector onto the body, you will see what's in that picture. Okay? So, and this was demonstrated to the United States government in 1968 by Hieronymus. I'm sure a lot of you heard of him. Some of you anyway. And their patent was received in 1968 as a device similar to this. But Hieronymus' projector worked on the principle of using a vacuum tube and a transistor, and this one uses universal energy. Okay. So the result is, when you sleep with this thing by your bed at night, you'll get highly energized. Okay. It might be, you know, like in Lorraine's case, where you have so much energy that you wake up energized and you forget it's there, and you walk into it and you have an accident with it. You know, you run over like a steam train. Okay? That's what happened last night. Because when I got this morning, I get up about 2:30 and at night I'm working on my book and I start channeling with the higher energies in the universe, because that's a creative time. And I was telling Kim, I said, watch what happens when I start channeling. And I started doing my channeling and my meditation in the other room in there. So I'd gone to bed around 9 o'clock. And I knew it. Sure enough, the whole house fell. Everybody got up. You know, it's about 3 o'clock, this house was just everybody running around. Okay? And I had one of these pointed right at my bed, so I was fully charged at 3 o'clock. And I stayed up till 6:30. When I finished at 6:30, I went back to bed for a couple hours. Because sleep has no value between 3 o'clock and about 6 o'clock anyway. That's when natural deaths occur. The vitality element of the sun isn't around. So now, we put pictures in the bottom of this thing. Okay? Put pictures in the bottom of this thing, you'll dream about looking at the picture. So it's a dream machine, and you can have a lot of fun with it. If you don't put pictures in the bottom of it, and you're dreaming in the morning, like I used, my dream is often active around 7, 8 o'clock in the morning. The phone rings, you get out of the dream, you can go right back into the dream. So it allows conscious re-entry into the astral body, or the dream state. Because remember, the dream state is the astral body, right? And so when you're sleeping at night, you move up into the astral body, and if you have enough energy left after dealing with a toxic body, then you can wake up and experience a dream. The person that's highly toxic says, I don't have any dreams. That's because their body is so busy dealing with the toxins in their body during sleep that they don't have any energy left or consciousness to wake up in an astral state. This allows that to happen. This is my favorite device of all.
What about putting studies under there, like some sort of study?
Yeah, you can put a book under it. You know, I had the Arantia book under it, and I started simulating that. You know, you could do a lot of things with it.
Did you simulate at all?
No,
that's
not all of it. But I, you know, it helps. I've been reading in that book for 5 years.
Is that actually like academic work?
Sure. Yeah. At night, it's like you know, one form of this would be taking a hypnotic tape, putting it in a pillow speaker. This is better though. This is more subtle. So anyway, this is one thing that, by understanding, you know, more about energy and other bodies of energy that we all have, it allows us to do that. Okay. So that's this thing here.
What kind of alloy did you use to raise them together?
Oh, we use solder here. This is a solder. Yeah, it's 24 karat gold, and this is soldered here with 4% bearing silver.
That doesn't prevent you energy immediately.
It prevents you from sleeping. No, it doesn't prevent you from sleeping. It makes you sleep better. Yeah. And the pyramid over the bed will help you sleep better too, but it might make it a little bit irritable for you until you get used to it. This thing right here allows you to sleep very nicely. The first effect on most people is that if they don't put a picture in, they have much brighter dreams than they normally do. So if a person is experiencing a brighter dream, what is that telling us? It's telling us that there's more energy going to the body. The body is assimilating that energy. It's like a boost, allowing the conscious mind to spend more time in the astral body.
What about a terrible, terrible dream that you don't want?
You say, tell it to go away. See, you're wide awake during your dream with this thing. So if your dream comes and it's a nightmare, you say, oh, that's a nightmare. I don't like that. I understand that. Go away. Whereas before, you're trapped in it. You know, you wake up screaming or something. You know, so it works that way. It allows you to be conscious during your astral state. It's really neat. It's a toy. You know, but it has a function. Okay. I have one of these with me that I'll sell. You know, I've only got one of those. Okay, now, talk about the electron. Okay? Now, the electron is a non-organic, is a pure form of natural charge. Okay? It is non-dissipating, so therefore it can store its energies in plants that have long since given up their organic matter and changed to various forms of carbon. The fact that certain grains of corn planted after 2,000 years produce new plants and fruit is ample proof that electrons sustain life in the pyramid. So, now, if we take a pyramid and we put it over a piece of fruit or something, and it stays fresh for a long, long time, we're demonstrating a divine principle of the universe there. But because the pyramid energy is giving us a life force, and the life force is keeping the bacteria from interfering, the natural drying out of that piece of fruit. So the fruit eventually will shrivel up, but it's trash. Okay. Now, the same thing happens, and by the way, pyramids don't dehydrate. They only allow things to evaporate without the interference of bacteria. So the same thing happens in a tree. If you look back at the apple that was on the tree, just before it vibrated off the tree, or fell off the tree, it had seeds in it. The seeds were completely formed. The apple could fall off the tree and rot. The seeds wouldn't rot for a much greater time. Seed is the electron formed in a non-dissipating source. So I could take those seeds and put them in a little jar without a pyramid and keep them around for 500 years and plant the seeds back in the ground. The seeds would probably grow. So that's the natural, that's the pyramid principle within nature, working through the storage of the seeds. Now, pyramid energized water, so that's the natural, that's the pyramid principle within nature, working through the storage of seeds. Now, pyramid energized water, okay, water stores pyramid energy. So plants will grow 3 to 5 times faster placed under a pyramid. That's why I put them in flower shops, and they saved a lot of money because they didn't have spoilers. So plants being watered with pyramid water, because a lot of times you can't use a pyramid over each plant. It's a little bit, you know, ridiculous when you consider the price of pyramids these days. So what you do is you take your pyramid and you put it over the water. When you put the pyramid over the water takes charge and you water the plant, and the plants will grow 3 to 5 times faster. The pyramid energizes water. Same thing as you can drink it.
How long do you have to have it over the water first?
About 12 hours with one of our pyramids.
You put it over a loaf of bread, look it into a loaf of bread.
Okay, if you put it over a loaf of bread, it keeps it from getting spoiled, but it still will dry out.
It doesn't give you any more energy than it had otherwise.
Oh yeah, it raises it up a little bit. Sure. Yeah.
What if you put it over food with preservatives and stuff?
It neutralizes it to a degree, yeah. For example, that is tobacco, a cigarette. Tobacco is not good for you. I'll explain why after we take a little break in a few minutes. But tobacco, the worst thing about tobacco today is the Indians didn't have cancer, and they smoked tobacco, natural tobacco. But the preservatives keep the tobacco fresh. the tobacco goes bad in 4 to 6 weeks, right? The tobacco that you get in a cigar or a cigarette machine is probably a year or two old because it has preservatives in it. So now the pyramid will neutralize the preservatives in the tobacco. And then what the result is, the tobacco tastes goes real mild, real bland. It almost gets flat. You can't do menthol cigarettes, the menthol goes away. So you can taste the difference.
Yeah, I like coffee with the pyramid on it because coffee normally makes my stomach growl. So I put the pyramid over and neutralizes the acid in it, and my stomach doesn't growl.
You might feel better.
Well, I don't know. It probably doesn't hurt me any. I've been drinking all my life. You know, I like it.
How far out does the energy, protective energy, go? Or they're only within the pyramid?
No, it goes out. In the argon plating process, it extends it out quite a bit. Okay, so it can go out.
3 feet or 20 feet?
It depends. A gold pyramid is 3 feet. A fire dome is 4 feet. A ray dome is around 5 feet, a power dome is 8 feet. Depends on the unit. We measure them. We measure each one, and we have
a great big bed one for our position.
Okay, a big bed one would be 6 foot. The normal rule for the extension, now this is before we go into the orgone effect, let me show you something. The normal rule in a pyramid is whatever the base is, it's one-third the base is where the field is going. So if you had a 10-foot base on the pyramid, you'd only have about a 3.5-foot field around it. But we broke the rules when we started understanding that Wilhelm Reich's work was all about the orgone effect. Because we use dissimilar metals, every time we use a different plating process, one on top of the other, it amplifies the power. So we've got 10-foot pyramids for the bed that have like a 50-foot input, an influential field, and you can measure changes in those influences.
Will that go through a wall?
Oh yeah, it goes right through a wall. Matter of fact, when we first started out discovering this, was we used to do small shows around Los Angeles years ago. And we had one show going down, it's where the year I met Timothy O'Leary and Ray Bradbury and put pyramids on their heads. It was during the L.A. Book Fair. And during the L.A. Book Fair, we had... fix a little bit. It's falling over. During the book fair, we were sampling grapefruit juice. And we had the pyramid inside of the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles. And pretty soon, people were coming along in the old days when we got into pyramid energy, where we had a tremendous track record. We had to show people there was an actual taste change. So we started out with grapefruit. We had some over here on the table, and it had grapefruit juice in it, and some more under the pyramid, and people would come by and they would taste the difference. That was the way we start, you know, mass consciousness. We start by appealing to one of the five senses, so they would be tasting the difference. So we were getting into the second day of the book show. People started coming along and telling us they couldn't taste the difference. So we said, now wait a minute, you know, what's wrong here? Why is it yesterday they would taste the difference and today they wouldn't? Nothing has changed. So we started checking the pH of grapefruit juice and we found that the pyramid had vibrated that room up to such a high atomic rate that vibrations of the room had been brought up. And it didn't matter whether you were in the pyramid or out of the pyramid, it was still neutralizing the acid in the grapefruit juice. So we had to take the grapefruit juice completely out of the building. Right, the control had to be brought out, taken out of the building. And in so many cups, you bring it in and pour it, you see, and it would last a certain length of time. But because then during that time, the pyramid was still changing it to taste faster, but eventually it would change anyway. So that's how we were able to... That was kind of a little accident that is what caused us to really move ahead. Now, vitamins go bad with heat and sunlight, okay? And if vitamin goes bad with heat and sunlight, then a lot of times you take a picture of the vitamin with the chronic aura right here, and you won't see any aura. That means it's bad. So we put the pyramid over it and the aura oftentimes comes back. And the same thing happens with green beans and vegetables because the soil today doesn't have any minerals in it like it used to have. So the mineral value is very low. So we find that by putting the vegetable into the pyramid and then looking at it, the aura is charged back up. So it's like a battery. The vegetable is like a battery and the pyramid is like a battery charger. And charging back up. Let's give you an idea about pyramid energy. Okay. Now, another area is enzymes. Enzymes are destroyed oftentimes by freezing. Well, we find that if you defrost under a pyramid, frozen food, that the taste comes back because the absence of an enzyme is characterized by the lack of taste. Okay. So, we can go on and on and on.
Well, we'll phase that out. It's just about over with. And there's a little bit of noise on that second part. We apologize for that, but it's still a lot of good information. It was an older tape that we did. So we're out of time here in about 20 seconds. So I hope you enjoyed the evening with Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy. And...